On today's show, Penhold mourns the loss of a leader and celebrates a lifetime of love. We'll also discuss the cultural effects of flags and hate laws. This is Penhold Talk Radio. And welcome, and thank you for sharing your time with us. My name is Brian Constein. I am here with my co-host, Michael Rowland.
Hello, hello.
So let's start with a little Penhold news, shall we? As probably many of you are aware, in this last week, there was a resignation of our MLA, Devin Dreeshan. He stepped down, or he resigned from his minister role. He was the Minister of Agriculture and Forestry. And he stepped down about a week ago after a wrongful dismissal lawsuit was filed and named him along with others, and alleged that there was a toxic work environment, and it seems largely due to heavy drinking, particularly on the job, or at least at the legislature. So he ended up stepping down. And so at this point, we pray that he gets the help he needs. I don't know him. I don't know him personally, but I do want to, at least I think it's worth recognizing that on the day he resigned, he did still uphold his commitment to come to Penhold's Remembrance Day ceremony. And so most of the time when this kind of situation happens with a politician, they kind of run off into hiding. But you know what? Not to downplay the allegation, we'll get to that in a second, but just to at least recognize that there was some effort made there to kind of step out in the public when it probably wasn't the most... I guess to step out in public when it was perhaps awkward to do so.
Yeah.
So I guess just another point on this, is I think this is just a good reminder that the politicians are real and flawed people. And it seems like they go through a lot of work just to present themselves as these like talking head personas.
Yeah. Yep.
And so they present themselves for the cameras. They always have their talking points. And so when something like this comes along, it reminds us that they are indeed real people. And so we definitely hope that Dreeshan is able to get the help he needs. Now, I think it's worth also noting that it would have been nice if he had stepped down before the allegations took place.
Yeah, rather than waiting until there's a lawsuit filed against him and others, and a little more preemptive action if it's actually an issue would have said something a lot more.
Yeah, it's almost like they have to defend the persona, because even when the allegations first came out, his first instinct was to deny it. Or at least kind of pass it off as, everyone kind of drinks and social, like you have social drinking, and no doubt that happens, but it seems like this goes beyond that. As much as I think it's good that he stepped down, and you hope that if necessary, I think he needs to step down, from the MLA role. If this is a big deal, let's go all the way with it and help make sure you're well enough to govern. You are in a very consequential position and something that you really need to be focused on.
Yeah. I think that's my biggest concern, is if it's worth stepping down from the Minister of Agriculture and Forestry position, then he really is probably not in a position to continue as MLA until he's gotten that help. If our MLA has a drinking problem, then somebody else needs to step up and take on that role.
Yeah. In other news as well, in around Penhold, sadly we have to. It was announced that Fire Chief Jim Pendergast passed away this last week. The Penhold Volunteer Fire Department Facebook made the announcement. He has been chief here for since 2009. Honestly, I was surprised that it hadn't been longer. He felt like a very much of a mainstay here.
Yeah.
And not just, I'm sure, having an impact on the fire department. but just having a presence here in Penhold. So he had been chief here since 2009. He'd been in the fire service for over 30 years, and again, I haven't had too much interaction with him, but he seemed like someone who's very passionate about the job he was in. Mm-hmm. Whenever I saw him, it always had some sort of Penhold Volunteer Fire Department shirt on, or he's in uniform, or he's driving their vehicle into town or something like that. I passed him on the road in one of the fire vehicles, not one of the fire engines. He drove around the other one.
Yeah.
The smaller one. But yeah, he was just always connected with it. And if the response on social media is any indication, his impact in the community was far and wide.
Yeah, it goes well beyond just the fire department itself. He was such a connection in this town. His influence definitely reached way beyond the fire department.
Yeah. Yeah. So we are obviously grateful for the time he put in here, the amount of work he did, the impact he had. And we just, again, pray for his family, that they would know God's peace during this time. And last piece of news from Penhold. This is actually a fairly busy week as far as Penhold news. I don't think we try to keep up to date on what's kind of happening in town, but not every week provides, you know, kind of Penhold news segment stuff.
Yeah.
So this is a kind of a fun week. Feel like actual reporters. This week also, November 10th. Yes, November 10th marked the 70th wedding anniversary of Elmo and Alma Johnson.
If anybody has had much connection to this town, they've heard those names.
So to commemorate just a tremendous achievement, like just living 70 years is noteworthy, it seems, let alone being married for 70 years. Deputy Mayor Mike Walsh visited. You've perhaps seen the pictures posted online. He presented the couple with a plaque from the town. And not only have they been married for 70 years, they've lived in Penhold for 69 of those years.
That is remarkable.
I think someone can correct me, but I'm thinking they are probably the longest. They've lived here the longest of any current residents. I wasn't sure how to frame that titling.
Yeah,
it's not like they're the oldest residents. Not really going that angle. They've just been here a really long time. I think longer than anyone else who's currently living here. Again, I'm open to being corrected, but 69 seems like it's pretty high up on the leaderboard.
Mm-hmm.
So they moved to Penhold in 52. The town Facebook post mentioned that at that time there's 174 people here. Right now we're currently over 3,500. So in those 69 years, population has grown 20-fold.
The changes they would have seen.
Yeah, like think about this. They have been here over half the lifetime of Penhold itself.
Yeah.
remarkable. Another post on Facebook noted that they actually raised their five children in the old Penhold railway station. Not I don't think it's the scissor house now. I think it's referring to the old one that was on the other side, of the tracks, the original one. So to have some fun with this, just kind of give you some context of what was going on in 1952. So 69 years ago. In Canada, or at least in Alberta, the premier was Ernest C. Manning, who was in the middle of his remarkable 25-year run as premier of Alberta. Louis Saint Laurent was in his fourth year as prime minister of Canada. Excuse my French. Harry S. Truman was president. We have An American in Paris won the Oscar that year. And if you're into musicals, definitely go check that one out. I've recently watched that one for the first time. And if you are a Gene Kelly fan, and who isn't, then you have to go watch that one. And you might know him more from Singing in the Rain. That's where he's from. And yeah, he's, that one is worth the watch. Go watch An American in Paris. Perhaps just in honor of being there, the 69 years that the Johnsons have been penciled. The top show in 1952, I Love Lucy.
Oh, man.
They were just in their second season. It's still a top show already, but only the second season of I Love Lucy. And then as far as books, Voyage of the Dawn Treader, The Chronicles of Narnia. And here, and this one's a little surprising, Charlotte's Web. To me, I always imagine that as an older book. Like, that was one that I remember reading in you know, elementary school, and just imagining that was an old book. But only 52, you know, it's still 70 years old, but
yeah,
it felt older, Charlotte's Web. And then finally, also in 1952, Mr. Potato Head was introduced. Or I think he was known as Mr. PH at the time. And here's just another tidbit on that, just kind of pile on all these factoids for you. Is apparently the first toy advertised on TV.
Really?
I'll have the source up on penholdtalk.ca. You can go check it out. But in the research, it showed that it was the first toy advertised on TV. I didn't look to see when TV came out. But yeah, that's the case. That's the information that came by.
So, interesting.
Yeah. So congratulations again to Mr. and Mrs. Johnson. 7 years, a remarkable achievement. And we hope for many, many more years to go. So on to our kind of main topics that we want to talk about today. And so last episode, we kind of ran through six different aspects of culture. Bonus points if you remember them before I repeat them here. The first one is artifacts. This is kind of the stuff and the ideas that are kind of introduced into a culture or into a group of people. We have the institutions. These are kind of the organizations that are part of a culture or society. Practices. These are kind of the traditional activities or behaviors that are expected. Beliefs. These are the ideas, the values that they're kind of held in common. We have the mood or style. This is, you can almost think of this like the personality or the characteristics of the culture at large. This is, again, kind of think of it as liberal versus conservative kind of leanings a culture might have. And then finally, we have meta beliefs. And this was the big fancy term for those kind of foundational beliefs, these things these answers to the big questions that guide us, whether we've thought about them or not, we operate as if we've answered them.
Yeah.
So think about them because whether you answer them intentionally or not, you are being led by your answers to those questions. And so we're going to look at a couple of stories related and just apply these different aspects to these stories to kind of help us become more culturally literate. It's perhaps easy to kind of compare cultures that are radically different, you know, say American with Asian culture or something like that. Even Canadian and American culture, you can distinguish. Or you can distinguish cultures over time. You know, the cultures and the value, or the cultures of say 1950 Canada or 1900s Canada is different than today. Mm-hmm. So those are easy, I think, to distinguish. The harder part, though, I think, is often trying to assess where culture is changing in the moment. And so hopefully, as we go through and these stories, and with this framework in mind, it helps us become a little more culturally sensitive to see where we might be drifting or guiding or being guided to in culture and perhaps do things about it if we seek to change it. And I also want to add one last definition, and I think this is the last one, so bear with me. I'm probably going to be talking a lot about symbols as we go through it. And here, I think the best way to think of a symbol is to think of it as an artifact or a practice that has been that signifies or references a certain belief. And so in our first story, we're going to talk about flags being lowered to half staff or half mast here in Canada, half mast. And so that's a certain practice we have, but it's not just simply about changing the altitude of our flag. There's so much more that goes into it. It's symbolic of something. Even the flag itself, you can reduce it to, a certain shape fabric with certain colors on it. Like you can reduce it down to that. But we all know it's a symbol for other things. We've applied different beliefs to that. So when we see the Canada flag, it invokes certain ideas, certain values to whoever believes it or whoever sees it. And so that's what we mean by symbols. So with that, with those ideas in mind, we kind of touched on this last week, but we didn't actually get time to get to it. Canada has flown its flag at half mast since May 30th. Now, just to kind of back up just a little bit, just back up to the 1600s. This practice of lowering the flag to half mast started into 1612, and it had to do with a British ship who had lost their captain in an expedition to Greenland. And so when they came back sailing home, they sailed up the River Thames with a half masted flag, and kind of an idea, at least in some scholars' minds, is it saved room for kind of the unseen flag of death that kind of hung over the ship. And it really became a practice and a symbol signifying kind of a shared or a collective mourning or sorrow for some loss that has taken place. And certainly Canada has followed suit. This is now a worldwide symbol. This isn't just a Canadian cultural thing. This is recognized across cultures. So it's unique in that way. So when Canada's flag is lowered, and when I'm referring to that, I'm referring to the federal government and their authority. So in this situation, on May 30th, the Prime Minister used his authority to lower all flags on federal government buildings to half mast.
Yeah, and we saw a lot of places follow along with that. You saw most towns, municipalities, they all followed suit and along with the federal government chose to lower their flag to half mast.
Yeah. Here in Penhold, you probably saw it. And perhaps it even caught you a little off guard as you saw it, that it was at half mast for a peculiar amount of time.
Yeah, I think I mentioned it last time that after a while, I didn't actually realize why it was at half mast because you don't usually see it for that length of time. I thought I missed something.
Yes, that's
because
right.
Usually it's... like we say, it's a symbol of something. And so it at some point, you see it go down for that loss, that collective mourning.
Yep.
And then after a few days, it goes back up. And so when I saw it still down, I thought I must have missed some event.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's because you don't expect it to be still down after a month or two.
No.
Signifying the same event. The practice has always been that you lower it to half mast for a certain amount of time and you raise it. And you can actually go on to a Canadian government website and they actually post the notices for half masts.
Yeah.
So they'll put in the occasion for why, and they'll also put in the locations. Usually it's going to be all across Canadian government buildings. And then you'll also see when it's supposed to come back up. Right. So they'll say from this point until, as I'm looking at one, it says until sunset on Wednesday, and they'll give the date for it. That has been the common practice that we are familiar with. That is kind of that has become symbolized as a state of mourning for some loss, some events that's taken place. And so when it was brought down initially on May 30th, I think it was done for a legitimate reason. There was some 200 graves found at a Kamloops residential school. And I think we, regardless of one's position towards the residential school system, the loss of any children or any child is tragic.
Yeah.
And especially when injustice is involved. So I think it was a completely valid decision to lower the flag. It was truly a moment where the nation, I think, could collectively mourn and should collectively mourn for this loss.
Right.
However, what ended up happening is that when it was lowered initially on May 30th, the notice gave no end date. And so it just stayed down there. It just stayed at half mast. And it only went back to half or to full staff on the evening of November 7th. So it has been down for, was over 5 months. I think if I remember, I did the math last week. I think it was over 5 months. And it was all down, is down for the same reason, or at least that's what you were thought or meant to believe. Now, the problem with this kind of semi-permanent lowering of half mast is I think it changes what people believe it was meant to symbolize.
Right.
It is meant to symbolize this sense of mourning over some loss. But there's also, I think, part of it has to be that the flag goes back up. So that's part of the practice. Like, it's not just the lowering, it's the re-raising of it.
Yeah.
That's a key component of it. Because just as much as a flag at half mast has symbolic meaning, so does a flag at full mast have meaning.
Right.
And that can't be overlooked. Because it ends up altering the cultural view of that flag. And again, the flag itself is a symbol for the nation and its values. And here, while during that time, I'll get back to kind of how some of those values and beliefs perhaps have kind of changed from kind of what we normally think of a half-masted flag to one that now we see almost as a semi-permanent lowering. What does that change? But just before that, I think it's worth noting that it's been at half mast continually for over 5 months. This included Canada Day, which if you look at actually the law, you go again on Canada's website. There we have I think it's under the Holiday Act, if I remember it on here, under the Holiday Act. There are 2 days in the year that the flag must be at full staff by law, Victoria Day and Canada Day, and it wasn't this year. That's significant. In addition to that, while it's been at half staff, there have actually been the Canadian government has continued to issue half mast notices. So these are notices, again, like I said before, where the government of Canada tells you why the flag is going to be put down at half mast and when it's going to be raised again. So over that time, over those 5 months, there's actually been 8 of these half mast notices put out.
And I wasn't aware of any of these because you don't see the symbol of the flag going from full staff or full mast mm-hmm. down to half mast.
Yeah, it ends up while these half masts are, you know, if you will, technically noticed and technically recognized, it loses all of its cultural meaning. Like,
yeah,
you just can't say, okay, let's lower the flag to half mast. Oh yeah, it's already a half mast. So then you've lost the meaning. The sense of collective mourning comes from seeing and recognizing a full-masted flag lowered.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't have that lowering, we don't have a chance as a culture to go, why, or at least to ask that question, why is it down?
Right.
Even if we might not be aware of the situation that preceded it, it at least triggers us to know in this Canadian culture that we are now, as a nation, recognizing something significant.
Yeah.
And that all those, there's eight times over the last 5 months that that we as Canadians have lost in being able to recognize these as a nation. So I just want to quickly run through these. In June, there was a half-mast notice for the tragic event, it says, that took place in London, Ontario. So this was the killing, I believe, of four people in London, the Muslim family.
Yeah.
There's a notice given. The flag was already half-mast. They did not get the honor of a half-masted flag. This was posted. It was technically recognized. It was not. It's not the same. This was lost. This was an opportunity lost. Again in June, it should have been lowered for the National Day of Remembrance for the Victims of Terrorism. That was lost. In August, there was a death of a member of a politician, the Honorable Bill Davis. In August, should have been at half-mast for that. In September, should have been at half-mast for Firefighters National Memorial Day. You would think that the nation might want to recognize that, and yet again, opportunity missed. Is another one from September, for a memorial service for deceased parliamentarians. Another time that was lost. September again, police and Peace Officers National Memorial Day. So it's kind of the parallel to the fire department.
Yeah.
Again, the notice goes out, lower the flags, but if they're already lowered, you don't have that practice, and therefore you don't have the symbol that goes along with it.
Yeah.
Then in November, we have another lowering for another death of a politician, the Honorable William G. Davis. Unfortunately, I'm not familiar with these two gentlemen, but nonetheless, it's an honor that is basically taken away.
Yeah.
And then finally, we have a lowering. This one, I had no idea. This one was for November 5th. It should have been lowered in memory of the tragic event that took place in Faro, Yukon. Are you familiar with the tragic event that took place in Faro, Yukon?
And I was not aware of it at all.
Neither was I. What ended up happening there was that two people were killed in Faro, Yukon. And I want to just point it out. It was a murder of two people. And I mentioned this, and I want to just highlight it for a second, because this was a murder that took place in the context of domestic violence. So this was an estranged husband that killed his estranged wife and another individual. Again, I'll have the an article posted on the website. And I highlight it because, just to kind of give you the heads up for next week, we have a lengthy conversation with Roy Mitten of Your Thriving Family, who's an expert in domestic violence and healthy relationships, and developing healthy relationships that's really kind of key to November being family prevention or family violence prevention month. And really, I think will be beneficial for everyone to listen to. And not only, it really isn't a conversation that's limited to, you know, whether or not you are in an abusive situation, how to get help. It's really identifying what are the healthy factors in, or what are the factors in a healthy relationship.
Yeah.
And whether or not those are there, and then you can take stock of your own relationship and see which direction it's going. But again, this is an event that had the honor of having the national flag lowered for it, that perhaps more people would have known or recognized it, particularly in November.
Yes.
Being on topic with this. And yet, because it was already at half mast, this goes unnoticed. Sadly, that was the consequence of such a basically the semi-permanent half masting of the flag, that we lost the opportunity to honor all these other losses, lives that really deserved it. Police officers, fire departments, the politicians, tragic deaths. These are all worthy. Worthy causes for lowering a half mast, and should have been, but unfortunately, the flag remained at half mast for the last 5 months, preventing the culture from experiencing the symbolism of such an act. Mm-hmm. All right, now going back to kind of what does it change in culture when a national flag is constantly lowered for particularly for this length of time. I think it loses its symbolic meaning, or at least its original symbolic meaning of kind of this noting of collective sorrow. And especially when you don't raise it up, I think this is where the real change comes in. We've only done half the practice.
Yeah, the symbol goes beyond the lowering. The raising is significant too.
Yeah,
it's a sign of moving forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not a forgetting, but just like it, I think we all recognize it's healthy. I think it's healthy to mourn and grieve, but that's not a healthy place to live.
No, if we saw someone mourning for a far too extended period of time, we'd be concerned for them.
Yeah,
and I think that this is a similar situation. We should be concerned for a nation that doesn't want to move past the mourning stage.
Yeah, and so what ends up happening is you don't have a collective sorrow. You end up having this ends up producing when a nation sees its flag constantly at half mast, it shows a nation that's at least stagnant. It's not moving forward. It's stuck in the past, and further, it's a nation. I think over time. It moves a nation towards seeing itself as shameful.
Right.
And now certainly every nation on earth has something it can be ashamed of. But again, just like living in a state of mourning is not healthy, living in a state of shame is no way a nation's going to live and thrive.
Yeah.
And so you lower the flag, you recognize the loss, you raise it up, and you move forward in whatever way is required to address perhaps the loss that's gone on. I think my cynical side says that this leaving the flag at half mast for so long, it ends up being kind of an excuse for the federal government to say, look at what we're doing for this reconciliation.
Right.
And so when we raise it up, well, we can no longer point to that example. Now we actually have to do something.
Yeah.
So like I said, that's the kind of the cynical side, but it just cannot be healthy for a nation to see its flag at half mast for that long. And even that's just an internal view of it. Like this is Canada's flags have been half mast at its embassies and consulates across the world.
Yeah, that's a significant symbol to the entire world of the state that Canada's in.
Yeah. Again, I think it reflects, it ends up reflecting a country that's unable to move forward.
Yeah.
That does not bode well for the future of a country. Regardless of its past mistakes, past harms, past injustices, you have to move forward. You can't stay in there. You can't stay in that place and remain healthy. So as we kind of look at some of the takeaways of this, you know, the flag has a certain symbolism. It has a belief, and there's beliefs attached to it. And so what we do with that flag as a nation reflects back on our culture. And I think there's almost a kind of a feedback on that, because as the world sees the Canada flag at half mast, they begin to see a nation. I think perhaps the Canadians themselves are internalizing a nation as well, who can't get beyond the past. And then at what point does that transfer onto the flag itself?
Right.
And it just kind of gets embedded into our psyche, the cultural psyche.
Yeah.
That we are just a nation that's just kind of spinning its wheels, and not moving forward. That is, I think that's the importance of the half mast. The practice of the half mast is the lowering and the raising. There has to be both of them there, in order for this practice to really be fulfilled. Otherwise, we are just kind of stuck in this kind of state of stagnation and shame until we raise it. And fortunately, we have now. Finally, it was only raised because it had to be lowered again in order to recognize our soldiers.
Yeah.
And quite rightfully so. Like, and so just think about that. Like, why not just put out another notice? Like, why not just put out another notice for the soldiers?
Yeah.
If that was the same thing as actually lowering it, why are we there? And so I think in the raising and the lowering for Remembrance Day, you implicitly recognize that you've missed the opportunity with all those other notices that we ran through. You've missed the opportunity.
Yeah.
So thankfully we've actually went through the practice of honoring and recognizing and collectively mourning the loss and the sacrifice of our soldiers. But hopefully by having our flag at half mast, we can again start moving forward, as a country, and fixing the things that perhaps have caused that loss in the first place, and not simply just pointing back to kind of these symbols that perhaps lose their meaning over time if they are abused in certain ways. So our second story turns to Edmonton. Edmonton is in the process of updating their harassment bylaw. Now, again, just a little bit of the backstory on this one. In late February, there's a protest in Edmonton, and I think there's a connected one down in Calgary, that was against the government health restrictions at the time. And in these protests, there were people carrying tiki torches. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about when I say that, but it's those little kind of grass, reed, torches that you probably put around your garden or out around your patio at night, perhaps to ward off the mosquitoes. These tiki torches were apparently being carried around by some protesters in Edmonton. And these torches have apparently been deemed racist symbols. And really where that stems from is the fact that these types of torches were used by white supremacists in a rally in Charlottesville, Virginia in 2017. And so with these tiki torches now symbolized as symbols of hatred and racism, in August, so the protests were in February. In August, the Edmonton Council passed a bylaw that would fine people for verbal harassment, and it's only limited to public land. And so if you're verbally harassing someone, you could get fined. Now this month, Edmonton Council is updating that harassment bylaw to include hateful symbols, or at least that's the quote that's used in one of the news articles. And this would be, at least among other things, primarily aimed at those terrifying tiki torches that the protesters were using. Now here, I think it's important to kind of give you the definition for what this what Edmonton bylaw is saying is harassment. So this is what harassment is. It says harassment as laid out in the proposed amendment includes, and this is a quote from an article again, you can go to the website to see the source. Includes feeling tormented, troubled, worried, plagued, or badgered. And then continues, banned behaviors would stem from, quote, experiencing objections or unwelcome conduct, comment, bullying, or actions that would reasonably cause offense or humiliation, including conduct, comment, or bullying, or actions because of race, religious beliefs, color, disability, age, ancestry, place of origin, marital status, source of income, family status, gender, gender identity, gender expression, sexual orientation, as well as sexual solicitation or advance. I think the only thing they didn't leave out was sports teams, which is kind of surprising. What's your initial thought on that definition?
It is really covering pretty near everything. If you are offended for pretty much any reason, it seems like that can fall underneath this bylaw. It really seems like if somebody upsets you on, I guess in this case, on public
property, it's on public land.
So on public land, yeah, if you feel offended, you can get the police involved.
Yeah. I've never seen a list quite that long, though. It's I think the human rights in Canada are getting close to that. But it's, yeah, it just seems like it sets a, because it says that, that any action based upon all those criteria listed through. Any comment based on, any unwelcome conduct, comment, bullying, or actions that could reasonably cause offense or humiliation. Offenses are like, it seems like a really low term, especially nowadays when it seems like it takes so little to rile someone up or to make someone feel, quote, offended by what I've said.
It even, like saying unwelcome conduct, comment, or bullying or action, you're covering pretty much anything to the point where an action that I take, not even directed at someone, could offend that person in a way that they deem inappropriate. And then I get fined for it. It even doesn't seem to indicate to me that it even has to be directed at them. It's just broad. If you get offended on public property, that person can be charged for it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem, I don't see any kind of intention. We'll get to that in a second, the kind of the intention element of it. But this definition does not seem to suggest intent has to be involved, or at least it doesn't have to be directed at any particular person. Yeah. If I'm reading it correctly. Any feeling tormented, troubled, worried, plagued, badgered. You're experiencing objections or unwelcome comment or conduct, comment, bullying, or actions. You're just experiencing those objections.
Yeah.
And so wherever that experience is emerging from, wherever that experience might be directed to, if you are in that vicinity of this harassing action, you seem to have a case here. Now, perhaps let's give the bylaw a little bit of a chance here. It does say reasonably cause offense. Does it? So it's, there has to be some sanity, I guess, in applying this. So, you know, you just can't be walking by some guy with a billboard sign that you find offensive and therefore that would that consider harassment under this? Is that reasonable? Is it reasonable for someone to be fined as harassing if they're walking around with a tiki torch?
I wouldn't find that reasonable, but who determines reasonable? That's
that used to be a significant word.
Yeah, but now it's
I'm finding it less and less so.
Yeah,
especially when you look at some of the article or some of the comments that were found that I found in some of these news articles. You have a member of Calgary's Black Lives Matter. They're quoted as saying, "When I see that, referring to these tiki torches, when I see that, I think KKK group. KKK groups, as far as Black people know, mean death. We can't go back to the 1800s. Is that the reasonable approach that this bylaw is taking? Or if you think that's a little bit off, kind of off on the side of things, or kind of on the fringe of perspectives, consider this, a tweet on March 2nd. So this is about a week after these protests that included tiki torches. And here, before I even get to that quote, just to give them, again, the best chance possible, there were apparently reports that some notable supremacist groups were in there. I forget their names. I don't even want to name them. But when you come across their names, you know them. They have at least some name recognition. So there were at least two groups that took part in the protest. They weren't the organizers.
Right.
They weren't even involved. They weren't the main part of it. They were groups that kind of attached themselves to it. And as far as the articles I've read, it can't even be said that the members of these groups were the tiki torch carriers.
Right.
It was just a group that were carrying tiki torches. So let's, like I said, make the best case possible. So you have a group that are protesting the government restrictions that are taking place, and members of supremacist groups bring themselves into the protest. Who brought the tiki torches? Who is carrying them? It's not entirely clear. All I know is that from the articles, no one alleges that it was that these hate groups were the instigators of tiki torches or the carrying of these torches. So that's a scenario. So on March 2nd, a week after this protest, on the official Edmonton Police Twitter account, it has this. It says, the Edmonton Police Service denounces tiki torches. Like, that's just a straight statement. It continues on, but just pause on that as a straight statement. So think twice about going to Home Depot for your next mosquito-repelling tiki torch. It's denounced by the Edmonton Police Service. And here, look, the president, and so the Twitter account goes on. The presence of these symbols used in our city is concerning. So again, they've immediately tied tiki torches to symbol. It's just, they were here, they're symbols of racism and hatred, and so therefore they don't have a place here in Edmonton. Continue on with the tweet. It says, there is no room for racism or bigotry in Edmonton. We understand the impact of these symbols do have on our racialized community. That, I think, has a significant telltale of how this bylaw is going to be applied. It's the impact. It's not what the tiki torch carriers intend.
Yeah.
In fact, there's another quote by one of the guys who was actually part of the protest, claiming that the tiki torches were signs of hope and warmth. In fact, this was the Arthur Pulowski, and we talked about him like one of our first episodes. But why can't it be? That's what he's claimed to be. Why don't we take that perspective of symbols? But no, the Edmonton Police Service says that these are symbols of racism and bigotry. And so anyone who it says we understand the impact of these symbols. So if these are, they're making a one-to-one comparison here. So just like we talked about the flag. When we see the flag, we attach certain beliefs to it. We understand that it conveys certain beliefs. What they're kind of doing here is the same with tiki torches. No matter what context you find a tiki torch in, it's now a symbol of hatred.
Yeah.
So careful with your next garden party or backyard outing or backyard barbecue. You could be putting up symbols of hatred around it and not even know it. And yet by this statement, they would be classified as harassment.
Yeah. If you apply that law with the idea of impact rather than intent, it leads down a dangerous route. As soon as somebody associates some item or some action with hatred or with a harassment, it doesn't matter what the intent is behind it.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have a negative impact on somebody and you are now harassing them.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, like wherever the Canadian flag is, it kind of bears the the values that are kind of imbued into it. And so wherever you find a tiki torch, given this logic, it has the, at least the capacity, if we're being kind, it has the capacity to offend someone wherever it might be. And that would qualify under this new bylaw as harassment. And this idea, this belief that intent doesn't matter is actually the kind of mentioned as part of, or by a member of Edmonton's Anti-Racism Advisory Committee. In fact, this person is the chair of that committee. And this person is quoted as saying, intent versus impact. Impact is what matters regarding this kind of harassment bylaw. So it's not going to be applied upon the motive of someone. It's going to be applied upon whether the person, the outside person, feels offended. That yeah. seems to be like, that's the criteria. And where this kind of reasonable standard comes in, who knows? But that doesn't seem like a much of a safety net. It seems like it's more about whether a person feels threatened or harassed or tormented, troubled, worried even. Worried is on there. Plagued, badgered by a tiki torch or any other symbol that might be grouped into this category regarding this bylaw. So just kind of, again, just kind of apply this to our cultural framework here. We have an artifact here. It's a tiki torch. So by itself, it's a tiki torch. Like, there's nothing special about it. It does what it does. It provides a little bit of fire, a little bit of light, and perhaps if you put some citronella in there, it'll take care of the mosquitoes for you. But I think what's ended up happening is that we see this artifact in culture. The tiki torch has been around for years here, dare I say even decades,
yeah,
without issue. And yet now it's being kind of deemed the symbol of hatred. And so we see culture shifting just even on that simple, seemingly mundane thing as a tiki torch. And so we see the shift in culture here. And just kind of a comment on that. I think we're seeing that in a lot of cases, where we kind of get this single, or narrow definition of something.
Right.
So this tiki torch must mean hatred. And you know, if you go around with tiki torches, therefore you're hateful. So you better be against those torches. But we see this in many other cases where identity is defined by like one feature. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, people are defined by the skin of their color of their skin, whether they're men or women, if you're trans or you're part of the LGBT, and that becomes basically your full identity.
Yeah.
And it creates a kind of a binary. And so when a culture tries to discuss those issues, without looking at all the kind of the different aspects of culture, it just shallows out the conversation. And I think it creates these lines, and like I said, these binary categories by which we can easily categorize people. So now I don't have to know anything about you. If you're carrying a tiki torch, I can categorize you easily.
Right.
You yeah. are this person. You are a hateful bigot. And I know why, is because you're carrying a symbol of hatred. It makes the world a lot easier
yeah.
if we just do that. But it sadly dismisses so much more of what culture is, so much more of what each individual is.
Yeah.
It doesn't help with kind of a conversation that I think we are at least addressing nuances that we have as individuals and as a culture. And I guess the other part of this, just to kind of wrap up start wrapping up, is I think this is a good issue to kind of highlight some of these foundational issues. And particularly here, the question is by whose standard do we define what is hateful? Mm-hmm. Like, who gets to say this? The bylaw doesn't actually give any list of hateful symbols. Yeah. So it's going to be an ongoing fluctuation of what is considered something you can carry and not show your hate versus what if you do, we can classify you as a bigot. But who gets to define that? That's going to be part of it. As they develop this harassment bylaw. Another quote from one of the articles, it says, while city council acknowledges enforcement could be tricky, administration hopes to work with anti-racism groups to establish a list of hateful symbols and actions that would evolve over time. The issue, though, that I find, and I think, like I say, it goes back to simplifying our perspective of one another and therefore of culture. You're going to be able to put together a list of hateful symbols. And I'm not saying there isn't any way of saying, you know, someone who's flying the swastika, for crying out loud. I think we can make a clear definition there. Yeah. But there we have, I think, kind of a cultural consensus on that. We have had that, if you will, conversation over that. But And then that's almost like more of like a flag has that symbol to it. But when so many other things are grouped together that just don't have that connection, that cultural consensus, you end up creating cultural divides. You end up creating division where, right, where it's not required. And you end up simplifying people down into these binary categories that just will not be beneficial to the direction of society and where a culture is going. So hopefully these articles, I think, are helpful in the sense of trying to see where some of these shifts have are happening even now. And as perhaps you've noticed, these both kind of pivot on artifacts that have become symbols, and so they have certain beliefs in them. And as a result, when we change that, or when we give new beliefs or symbolize something, that's a sign of a direction that the culture might be shifting.
Yeah.
So, you know, 5 years ago, you walk out of Home Depot with a tiki torch, you don't think twice.
Yeah.
But now you have to be, and perhaps you will be thankful or thoughtful, or at least aware of, that this is not just a mosquito repellent. This could be perceived as something else.
Yeah.
And that's a significant change in culture. And then who knows how far down the line that goes, what is defined as hateful versus not, especially when something is not intrinsically connected that way. We'll keep using this kind of these parameters, looking at artifacts, institutions, practices, beliefs, mood, and these meta beliefs. We'll use that framework and hopefully develop kind of a common language and a common framework to kind of assess and kind of be more aware observers of culture and perhaps where it's going. If you've stuck around to this long, thank you for joining us. Perhaps this has been a little bit more of a intense conversation than in the past, but I hopefully you got something from it. Hopefully it stirred something. Hopefully you can add to the conversation, throw a comment in, get in touch with us in some way. This is kind of the goal of having this podcast, is to facilitate this conversation, perhaps in ways that might not be so easy otherwise. But we're happy to be the instigators, I think, in many of these conversations. At least I'll speak for myself. Michael, who knows?
I'll tag along.
You'll tag along? Okay. But thank you for coming along with us. Thank you for watching or listening. My name is Brian Constantine.
And I'm Michael Rowland.
And this has been Penhold Talk Radio.